You are listening to the ForceCom Frontline, bringing you to our soldiers on the front lines of readiness.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the ForceCom Frontline. I'm Jeannie, and I'm going to be your host today. Today, I am joined by Sergeant First Class Kira Lowe, who is a two-time top station commander for recruiting, and she earned that award at the Louisville, Kentucky station, and she is currently the station commander for the Pooler recruiting station, which is outside of Savannah, Georgia. And last month we spoke with Command Sergeant Major Monday, the senior enlisted leader for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, about recruiting as a whole. And today, Sergeant First Class Lowe and I are going to dive a little bit deeper into what it takes to join the U.S. Army and live the Army way of life. So welcome, Sergeant First Class Lowe. I'm very excited to have you here today. So thank you for joining with me.
Hello, hello, Jenny. How are you?
I'm
very, very grateful to be on this podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you today. So just to kind of get started, why don't you tell me a little bit more about yourself, where you're from, you know, what made you decide to join the Army? How long have you been? That kind of thing.
So my name is Sergeant First Class Lowe. I am from Kissimmee, Florida. I have been in the Army for 13 years. I am married to another service member, Sergeant First Class Nolan Lowe, who is currently a 92 Alpha, stationed at Hunter Air Force Army Airfield.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. So let's just jump right into it. So for somebody who's coming into the Army, you know, you're pulling them straight off the street. We call them civilians, non-prior service, NPS. For those of you have heard of NPS, that's what it means, non-prior service members. What qualifications do you need to join the Army?
Okay, so a couple basic qualifications, mm-hmm. right, is, first of all, the motivation to want to join, right? We want people that want to volunteer to be in our force, to be a part of the Army, which is like the greatest fighting force in America. Couple things is they have to be between the ages of 17 and 35. We are currently allowing age ETPs where they can enlist up to the age of 42 and must ship before their 43rd birthday. Meet basic medical standards for accessions, minor law violations, and a completed Tier 1 education, meaning a GED, high school diploma, college education, so that they can meet the basic requirements of being able to enlist. Now, we do allow waivers for certain medical disqualifications, certain law qualifications, but overall, those are mainly the smallest of the qualifications to be able to serve.
Okay. And you talk about waivers. What would you give a waiver for? Like, what's an example?
So a popular waiver that we see come through the command would be something like ADHD. Right. Currently, we have a waiver for ADHD within the last year. You would typically have to submit, you know, your IEP, your high school or college transcripts, a work recommendation letter stating that you can work under, you know, stressors without having to be, you know, watched over all of the time, supervised at every level of what you do within your job. It's normally waived. And, you know, of course, if you aren't on any medication within that last year, it's normally waived so that you can serve.
Okay. And what is an automatic disqualification?
Something that would be a current automatic disqualification is if you are on any kind of medication where you would need that to be able to live, basically. So asthma is a huge thing. A lot of people call in asking, hey, I currently have a diagnosis of asthma where I require my inhaler. That would be, unfortunately, a disqualification.
Okay. And I know you've kind of spoke about medical stuff. You know, what about criminal records? Things like that, anything serious medical-wise, you know, we say asthma, which, you know, is fairly common, but maybe someone who's had multiple knee surgeries or physical limitations of that sort, is that something that's an automatic disqualifier?
Yeah, something. So when I think of a physical disability, I would say like someone who, for example, had a stroke, right? And then the whole left side of their body was permanently disabled where they could not have the function of it. That would be something that's 100%, you know, a medical disqualification. When I think morally, I would say someone who is currently on probation because they have not completed the terms of their probation, a two-time felon, someone who possibly received 3 DUIs or whatnot, that would disqualify you from service, or someone who, you know, let's think way out there, right? Because you have people that will call that was charged and found guilty of homicide, something like that. Those would definitely be disqualifications. However, a speeding ticket or two, or you've gotten a DUI, you've completed your, you know, your time served, you've completed your requirements to get off probation and everything, you could join the Army with a waiver.
Okay, fantastic. So coming into in order to join, there's a test you have to take. It's called the ASVAB. You know it. I know it. So can you explain a little bit about that process of taking the ASVAB and what the scores mean?
Yes. So you take the ASVAB. It's basically an aptitude test. It basically tests your skills, your common skills every day, not just reading and math. There's science on there. There's automotives on there. There is assembling objects. It's just kind of trying to get an idea of who you are as a person and what you would be best successful in career-wise. Not only is it good for the military, but it also kind of helps an individual determine, like, hey, what would I be good in and be most successful in for a career? There's 10 sections of the test. It is a time test where you have about 3.5 hours to take the test. It is scored on a percentile. So you have it ranging from a 0 to a 99, right? No one can get a 0 on the ASVAB. That is your starting score where, you know, you're starting the test. And then from there, you would either score a 1 or a 99. Now with it being a percentile, that doesn't mean I scored a 57, I got an F, because that's what most people would correlate that to. Mm-hmm. That 57 is actually a really good score. It's considered an alpha in the Army. And that just means that if 99 people took that test, you scored better than 56 of those people that took the test.
Okay. And what kind of careers could you think of for, you know, someone who scored a 57?
I mean, the opportunities are endless.
Well, I mean, Sergeant Major Monday said there was over 200 MOSs. And for those who don't know, an MOS is a military operational specialty. So he said there was over 200. So I was just kind of curious if you come up with a top of your head of somebody who was like middle of the road there.
So normally, let's see, you score 57. Even on the ASVAB, certain MOSs that would be open could range from anything combat related, right? Your air defense, your infantry, your tankers, all the way up to like pharmacy specialists. Okay. You have nutritionists, you have dental hygienists, public affairs, you have human resources. There are numerous jobs that you could qualify, probably jobs that you never even thought that you would qualify for. And the best part about it is that the Army is going to send you to school and get you certified in that job, and you don't have to pay a dime.
Absolutely.
You know, so absolutely amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. So, and you know, everybody talks about physical training or PT.
Yeah.
When you're looking to join the Army, do you have to have any kind of basis for physical training already in place, or be in shape, anything like that? Or is the Army going to send you to boot camp and just train you up?
So I would say, like, most people that know they're wanting to join, that's one of the top questions they ask, right? When I joined, people were more athletic. We went outside, we played. Now we're kind of a inside community. We're a generation where we're on our phones, we're on our laptops, we're gaming. Regardless if you exercise before training or not, once you get to boot camp, those drill sergeants are there to train you to get into the physical standards that you need to be in to serve. I remember when I joined, I was not the best runner. I'm still not the best runner, right? But I know how to run properly and I know what to do so that I can meet my physical requirements to serve. I just tell everybody, go in with the mindset of you're going there to be a better you. You're going there, you know, to have some fun, encouragement from your peers, and not only, you know, your peers, but within yourself. And you'll learn how to get physically fit along the way. You're going to do it every day for 10 weeks. So you'll be the best you can be by the time you're done with it.
Okay. I love it. So let's talk a little bit. So now we've kind of covered qualifications and disqualifications and requirements and things like that. What does an Army contract look like? You know, say I came to you and said, I want to join. What kind of contract and what are the details of that?
Okay. So you have two types of contracts. You have your active duty Army contract and you have an Army Reserve contract. Army Reserve is a part-time contract where you'll serve part-time within the Army and be a civilian full-time in your community. An active duty contract is more of a full-time option for civilians looking for a salary position. Once you sign that contract, it will give you the MOS that you're going to serve in, any extra incentives such as duty station of choice, airborne option, ranger option. It'll tell you the time requirements of your contract, whether you're going to do a 4-year term, a 3-year term. We even have 2-year terms. That's an option. It'll tell you what your incentives are. Like, you're going to get the Montgomery GI Bill. You can opt into it or opt out into it. If you signed up for student loan repayment, it's just going to have everything that you're going to serve that term for and what requirements you must meet to be able to stay within that contract. And if you happen to change your mind, what's the process if you decide to change your mind?
Okay. So now I'm curious about that. If I did change my mind, what would happen?
Yes. So while you are a future soldier, up in, meaning that you have not shipped to training yet and you are waiting on your ship date, i.e. your ship date is 10 May, you actually have until 10 May to depth out, which is delay out of your option for your contract, and decide, hey, you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity, but this I don't think is going to be for me. Of course, you'll talk to your recruiter. They'll go over, you know, why isn't an option for you anymore? Why have you decided to change your mind? If, you know, there's any obstacles that we can get over, we'll get over them and you'll still ship to basic training. But if you just decide, like, hey, it's not for me, that's okay too. You don't go to jail. No one's going to come pick you up. We're going to have you sign a dep out form where you'll decide, hey, I no longer want to do this. And then there's no harm, no foul. You can go about your way.
Okay. So, and that's before you ship out. What if I were to join and then a year later, I'm like, I hate this. I want to get out. Are there options at that point?
Yes. Well, there's always an opportunity. That's what you have your command team for. You'll go have that honest conversation with your command team. You'll sit down with your commander and anyone else that is a huge influence within your career. And you'll decide, like, hey, this isn't for me. And then they'll look for ways to have you discharged without it being something that's dishonorable, because we never want to get dishonorably discharged or, you know, worst case scenario, go AWOL. There's never a need for that when there's plenty of opportunities for you to be able to discharge a proper way and one that is possibly honorably.
Okay. Now, you went straight to discharge. What if it's, you know, I just hate being an infantryman and I don't want to do that anymore. And I see, you know, Private Smith over here, he's looking at going into public affairs and that looks really, really fun. Can I switch to that MOS? Is there opportunities to do that? Or is my only, you know, option, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Can I switch or do I have to be discharged?
So I actually was a 42 Alpha before I became a permanent recruiter, which is a human resources specialist. There are plenty of opportunities for you to be able to change your career path in the military. I say military because, you know, whether you join another branch, you hear about soldiers who were or other service members that were one MOS and then they decided to go to a different career path. It is very, 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 very possible. You can start out as an infantryman and decide, hey, my window for reenlistment is opening. I think I want to be public affairs. You'll go sit down with a retention NCO or a retention officer, and they'll sit down and go over your options to see what's open for reclass. You know, some of those retention options may be, hey, you can go to school for 6 months. You can retrain, you can get stationed somewhere else, anything to kind of help the soldier want to stay in and continue to serve. But yes, there's opportunities to be able to change your career field over once you are in the service.
Okay, fantastic. And I want to kind of backtrack for a second to the contracts. And you mentioned different times, or I should say terms of the contracts, term limits. Yeah. You know, you said 2, 4, 6. What are the difference between those, I guess, as far as like what constitutes like I only want to join for 2 years, or you have to do 4 years? Like, is there a certain stipulations to those contract terms?
Yes, ma'am. So certain MOSs are going to require a 6-year obligation, right? So say you join as a, let's do practical nursing, right? A 68 Charlie. That is actually an LPN, and this it converts over to an LPN in the civilian sector, right? You're going to go to school for at least a year, right? Being that the schooling is so long, the Army has invested so much money into you and training, you're going to incur a service obligation that will fulfill the cost of that training that you received. That is why that contract would be 6 years. And it just kind of determines on, you know, how long the training is, how much of the money that was put into that MOS will determine your service obligation. You have some jobs like 92 Golf, culinary specialist, that you can enlist in a 2-year obligation. You can do your 2 years to see if the military is for you or if it isn't for you. And you can get out, you serve honorably, you'll get a portion of your GI Bill, and you can go about your way.
Okay. All right. I mean, sounds good to me. So, speaking of like different MOSs and stuff, Sergeant Major Monday had mentioned bonuses up to $50,000. And that number like really stuck with me. And he was like, you know, 11 x-rays. We need 11 x-rays, which are infantrymen. You know, how do bonuses work? I know not everybody is going to get $50,000. But how does that work? You know, and how much you get, how is it paid out, things like that?
Yes. So bonuses come in all shapes and forms. Some MOSs will get bonuses. Some MOSs will not get bonuses, depending on the season. This season, 11 x-rays may have a bonus. Next season, 11 x-rays will not have a bonus, right? They are paid out in increments. So say you do a 4-year term, it's a $40,000 enlistment bonus. Department of the Army is going to pay that $10,000 once you complete training. And then every year on your anniversary, you would get paid out an equal amount, right? So you'll get $10,000 the second year, $10,000 the third year, $10,000 the fourth year, equaling out into the $40,000. Now, a disclaimer that a lot of people should know, you must complete that service requirement. So say halfway into your second year, you've been paid that second $10,000, and you do not fulfill the rest of that year, you do owe that money back. Because you did not, of course, complete your obligation. And that's okay. Typically how bonuses work.
Okay, fantastic. Because I know everybody asks, like, how much of a bonus am I going to get? And then you also get bonuses for reenlistment, too, if it's,
yes,
you know,
ma'am.
If it's available to that MOS and things like that. So kind of speaking of money, what are some of, you know, like, we all know the base pay. You can look that up on Google for the military. Let's talk like benefits and entitlements that you get as far as being in the military. Obviously, we talked about base pay. What else is out there?
Yes. So this is one of my favorite topics.
Everybody loves money. I'm just saying.
Yes. So one of the coolest, I think, incentives that you can get being a soldier is basic allowance for housing, right? I talk to my mom about it all the time. I talk to my friends about it all the time. I think it is absolutely amazing as a service member that you can join married with children and DOD is going to give you a housing allowance to be able to take care of your family and have a roof over their head. Outside of your base pay. So that is one worry that you don't have to worry about, because in the civilian sector, yeah, your salary may be $40,000, but $20,000 of it is going to go to your housing. So then you're stuck living off of another $20,000 to feed your family, to get gas for work, get clothes, get shoes, to be able to provide for your family. So basic allowance for housing. We also do BAS, which is a substance allowance for service members with families. That is grocery money. It ranges from $300 to $400 a month to be able to provide food for your family. Every year we get a clothing allowance so that we can buy and keep our uniforms up to date and looking good. We get free health care. We get free dental. I can stub my pinky toe on the chair and I can, you know, go to sit call and don't have to worry about a bill coming to me later on for stubbing my pinky toe. Tuition assistance, it's $4,000 a year. It's an amazing thing. It actually allows you to be able to get your bachelor's degree by the time you finish a four-year term. It doesn't cost you anything. So I don't know. I think those are some intangible benefits that I think everybody should, you know, take a part of or want a piece of, because it's expensive out in the civilian world. And a lot of civilian jobs are not offering those types of benefits.
Oh, 100%. You know, I work for the military, but I don't get BH and I don't get BAS or anything like that. I just get a civilian salary. Was married to the military for 17 years he was in while we were married. He retired 5 years ago. So some of those benefits still kind of go when you retire, because, you know, you talked about healthcare and BAS and BAH and things like that. And when we're talking about food, I want to mention DFACs, the dining facilities. Yes. Those are open to not just the single service members, but also to the families. I remember my husband going to have breakfast with his buddies in the morning because they have really good chow at the DFAC, apparently, yeah, for breakfast. I feel like that's another benefit. And then, you know, those are the other things, you know, those are just the basic things, you know, commissary. You know, you get that $300 to $400 a month for BAS can go towards commissary, which is significantly lower than, you know, the grocery stores outside of the base. So I believe that's another benefit. And then, you know, gas is comparative to off-post. Some places it's cheaper. Some places it's more expensive. It just depends on where you're located. When I was out of JBLM, it was never cheaper on post. For some reason, it just wasn't. But you learn those things when you go to a different installation. So I just wanted to point out, like, those extra benefits on top, you know, that you go a little deeper and you're like, oh wow, I didn't know I got this and I got that, and things like that. Food courts on the base, which are tax free, so you don't have to go to the Taco Bell or the Popeyes off the base. You can go down to the food court and get it, and, you know, and that's fantastic. So I love that. You know, so we talked about MOSs and things like that and the benefits. Is there, you know, I'm kind of moving past that. Is there anywhere, you know, MOS-wise that we're hurting for people? You know, I know Sergeant Major Monday said 11 X-ray, but proportionately that's also makes up a larger percentage of the force come force or just the Army force in general. Is there anything that's like absolutely needed outside of, you know, infantry? Because I feel like that's always going to be a need.
So I would say it just depends on the time we're in. We get an in and out call where, hey, these jobs are absolutely needed. We need to fill these seats. The Army's running low on these service members. We would like to prioritize these seats. However, for myself, being here in the Savannah area and also coming from Kentucky, I honestly have kids coming in wanting to be whatever, you know, I don't have anybody coming in time after time requesting a specific MOS. It's just like the civilian world. You'll line 10 kids up and they'll say, hey, I want to be an architect. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a police officer. And you get that still when they come in. There isn't a job that I see where they're like, hey, I want to do this specific job. And you hear that maybe four times a day. I think it's kind of evenly spread, especially since we can serve from anywhere within the, you know, U.S. nations and our territories. I don't see any job where they're like, hey, this job is always, always asked about. I think it's kind of fair across the line.
Okay. So very comparable to the civilian world. I like it. You know, I want to talk about rank for a second. Yours are in first class, yes. Which is an E7. Yes. You know, rank is very important to the Army and to the military world in general. So how do you get rank? Like, how do you rank up? Like, you know, you join as a private. You know, how do I get to be an E7?
So the Army promotes off time and service, obviously. I can't put you in the Army with 1 year of experience as an E7, unfortunately. However, you meet your time and service, time and grade, which is your E6, your E7 positions, and then you'll get promoted based off potential. The Army promotes off potential. So if you're coming to work every day, being the best soldier that you can be with a great attitude, right uniform, you know, being an influence within your unit, the Army's going to consider you for promotion. You sell yourself. We're going to take the bet saying, hey, based off his everyday behavior, we know he's going to be a great leader. Let's go ahead and send him to the next rank. Well, the next board, so that we can interview him for the next rank. And you'll interview for the next rank. You'll go to that leadership class. You'll make points based off where you're at for college, PT and stuff. And then once you make points, you'll get promoted. So it's basically in your hands. As long as you're a great soldier and you're doing what you're supposed to do, we're going to outline it for you. Do what you're supposed to do and you'll get promoted.
Okay. Fantastic. I love it. So, you know, you guys are putting soldiers into the Army at the what we call enlisted level. What if I wanted to be an officer? You know, I came to you and I said, well, I want to be an officer. What do I need to do to do that?
Yes. Well, hello, I'm going to be your recruiter again.
Okay.
Because we can promote, we can actually contract OCS, which is officer. We can contract chaplains. We can contract doctors. You'll have certain recruiters set for that type of enlistment. OCS is an option that I can give you coming into the Army. I can't give you green to gold just because you would have to go to ROTC. You would commission that way once you're in. However, coming from the civilian sector to want to join as an officer, I can. It's a board process. You'll complete a packet for the board, which requires you to test, take your ASVAB, do a physical screening. You'll do an officer commissioning physical. You'll sit down in front of a board. You'll give your resume, your recommendation letters, an essay on why you should be an officer. You'll compete against other officer candidates within the nation, and then a board would happen every quarter to determine if you are selected to become an officer or not.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. And that's really all I can think of to ask right now. So is there anything else that you can think of that someone would need to know about joining the Army? Just like anything. I know we talked about a lot of different stuff. So if I miss something, please throw it at me.
I would just say that if it has crossed your mind and it's something that you've thought about doing, do it, right? If you don't know if you want to go, you know, head on and do full time, go part time. You know, you don't ever want to look back and be like, hey, I should have done this. And now the time has passed where you unfortunately cannot serve due to other reasonings. I say put your best foot forward. Go see a recruiter. Walk in with an open space ready for, you know, opportunities and be ready to be all you can be.
Absolutely. And with over 1,800 recruiting stations across the world, I'm sure somebody will be able to help you out there, right? Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
So I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today, Sergeant First Class Lowe, and talking to me. I learned a few extra things that I didn't know before, and hopefully our listeners and our viewers learn a little bit more about joining the Army and will push a friend or take that leap of faith themselves and go and be all you can be. So I just want to say thank you.
You are very welcome, and thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We'll see you all next time on The Frontline.
That's it for this episode. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can also find full video episodes of our podcast on YouTube. You can just search for The Force Comm Frontline, and we'll see you next time on The Frontline.